the stars, through the airwaves, and on the big screen. We're live from Hollywood. It's Super J Radio with your host, Garrett Miller, starring Paul and Matt.
Yahoo! You hit it.
Yay!
We're back, baby.
You hit it, son of a bitch. Good job. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Is this like the third week in a row I got our theme music right?
Yes, it is. Especially considering one week we're a repeat, so that was okay.
Oh my God!
Oh,
I'm so glad to kick off my Saturday morning with you. I will, Paul. I'm going to be honest. Every morning, you know, because I don't drink, I don't do anything that you know. I don't. The worst thing that I poison my body with might be a couple of you know. Things of dark chocolate at night or some fat-free pretzels. That is my vice. Ooh. And downfall. I don't even eat ice cream, but come, you know, Saturday morning about 7 o'clock, cause I'm usually up during the week really early. There's something about Saturday morning that makes me want to sleep in until like, you know, 7:12 or, you know, some ungodly hour like that. And then I look at that
right.
And go, like, what the heck am I doing? I'm gonna be on the radio in you know 43 minutes, and I don't know. And then about 5 minutes before, it's like boom! I just come to life, and I'm like, thank you, Paul, because you jumpstart the whole weekend for me.
Yahoo! I like that.
Yeah. So how's your weekend going?
My weekend's going pretty good. I've actually had a pretty good week this week. I've got a really busy week coming up ahead of me, which. Jim and I were talking about it on Thursday, and I said, oh, I've got to sit down just talking about it. But because, no, I'm busy. I think next Thursday is the only day during the week that we don't have something going on, and, which is just completely not what I've been running on since last July. I mean,
you're always going.
Yeah, I'll schedule one or two things, but I like my – I like my recliner way too much, you know.
Isn't that funny that you know, you thought, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do in retirement or something like this. And now you're busier than ever. And like one of these days I'll sit in my recliner.
You know, once you start doing it, I tell anybody, if you really, really don't want to do it, don't start it because it's an addiction. I gave up drinking easier than I could give up my recliner. You know, I read your posts and Brent down in Austin, you know, he's at the gym doing this, that, and it's like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. I just reading about these people. I have to sit down and have myself a little rest here.
Brent in Austin does wear me out with his post, though, I will tell you.
No shit. It's like, Jesus, when do you have time to work? And then I remember he pushes the button for work, so it's not necessarily.
Well, that's really why he needs to work out, because he presses the button.
I know. Yeah, he gets no real exercise at work, so he has to keep fitting into those tight little pants. But speaking of that, I bought a selfie stick.
You did.
Years old, I'm buying fucking selfie stick. Well, I'm liking doing the Facebook Live thing, and
I was going to ask you about that because you've got quite the portfolio, shall we say, of Facebook Live video. What do we call it now?
It's Facebook Live. It's just it used to be Facebook mentions if people were celebrities, like real celebrities, like Tom Goss does his mentions, and he like last night he did a concert for people on Facebook. But now they opened it up to the phone app. You can't do it on the computer or the tablet, but on the phone app you can do your own live, no matter who you are. And so I pop on, I, you know, promote the show and tell people what's going on or tell people to fuck off or, whatever I feel like doing that day. I pop, it's fun. You know, I try to do them for like 10 to 12 minutes, but they usually end up to be about a half hour. But I needed the stick thing because it's much more comfortable to hold and, it's easier.
I like,
especially,
you know what we need to come up with next?
What's that?
You know, if I go out to watch live music, especially artists of a certain age, that means anybody who's over 12, everybody's got an iPad stand that they just put their iPad on so they can either see what lyric to sing or what song they're going to sing or what their set list is. We need to come up with an iPhone stand so people who want to do this live video stuff can just set it down and then act like they've got a, you know, a news camera. News Chopper 5 is, you know, is filming.
They already have it. I bought one of those too. It's a tripod for your phone.
Of course. How much is said selfie stand?
Okay, the tripod was $7 and the selfie stick was $14.
I thought you were going to say something horrible like the selfie stand was $100. Well, I'm coming up with $100 selfie stand, so there's got to be at least three morons out there who would pay that.
Yeah. Well, the thing, the stand one, all it is a tripod with like a little vice thing that holds your phone.
Yeah, and you just, selfie, that's all you need.
You can get selfie sticks for $6. Mine was $14 because it's Bluetooth enabled that I can operate the phone with my thumb. I don't have to like go up to the phone when it's already.
Oh, I like. Yeah.
Telescope.
Very
out.
Cool.
Amazon. I mean, I love Amazon.
Amazon
really
is the best.
We shop Amazon way too much. I want to say we've got between me, Jim, and Keith, his son that's living here, Amazon is dropping off at our house 4 out of 7 days a week.
Are the delivery people at least cute?
We very rarely see them. They kind of just like run out of the truck.
It's from the post office too, so I guess it would be your, you know.
Post office on weekends, it's UPS. And they just drop it and run. The thing is, some of like the new ones will park the truck down on the street, and then you got to walk almost 600 feet up to the house. It's like uphill.
They're trying to get their exercise. I mean, they know they have to impress, so you know they better work those quads.
That they have not discovered the recliner. That's what it is. You know, because the recliner that's my kick this week, people. The recliner is, and it has to be a Lazy Boy. Don't be buying any of these cheap $200 Kmart special things because it's not going to last. A Lazy
Boy. Kmart's closing all their stores, so nobody bought their recliners.
I know, and it's because Kmart bought Sears. They should have just let Sears go. The only thing Sears actually still owns is their appliances, the Kenmore appliances, and the Craftsman tools, which are the only two things that ever made Sears any money anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kmart made a huge – and again, Amazon is killing all of these stores.
Here's why I think they're killing it. Number one, I'm not a shopper, but if I need to go get something, the convenience of doing it on Amazon is great. Plus, I can always spend whatever their minimum is to get the free shipping, so that's fine. And I don't buy crap I don't need either, so it's not like I'm sitting here in a hoarder's thing when I really just needed a pack of batteries. But you know, I think the big mistake the brick and mortars have made over the years is they started to let service really slip, and then you started to see all of these things people would post about, look what happened when I went into JCPenney's, and look at all the crap on the floor, and da-da-da-da-da. And people started seeing all these horrible images of what the stores were not kept up to. So when you walk into the store, you expected to see a big train wreck. And who wants to go spend money at a train wreck and you're trying to, you know, do anything? Not me. So that, you know, hearing or seeing things like that, the first thing I'm going to do is go, I'm not shopping there.
That's true. Although, I mean, like, Kohl's keeps me going into the store with their 30% off and Kohl's Bucks and all that stuff. And I mean, they got that down.
Kohl's is pretty good. They've got it figured out how to keep their stores clean, at least the two or three that are around where I live. And I will tell you, the only thing that I don't really like is how they do their checkout, because it's like, you know, everybody that's in the checkout line, forgive me if you're in a store with me when I go to Kohl's, you're a bunch of friggin' morons. And it seems like it takes forever to get through the line, but the people at the check, the cashiers, very helpful, super efficient, and they're great. It's just like all the people that are in the line. And I'm sure I'm one of the morons too, so I'm going to throw my name in there and the pot calling the kettle black. But outside of that,
you are.
You know, Yeah, well, you know, but the stores themselves clean. You know, you can usually find what you need. There's they're not overstaffed, but if you need help, you can usually find somebody fairly easily. And, you know, that says a lot in retail today because they don't staff them where it's, you know, 8 personal shoppers to each customer any longer.
Right.
But, you know,
you're right. And, you know, but that's why I like Target over Walmart. Not even just for their political policies, but because, you know, Target almost always has a register open, or I'm not waiting in line for more than one or two people in front of me. Where we are, I mean, we've got Wegmans here. Wegmans started here. They're the number one grocery store in the nation. They have gate. What I fucking hate shopping there. And it's not the store. They've got a great store, but the customers are just the most entitled, self-centered, standing in the middle of the aisle.
Is it kind of like going to Paycheck or something?
It's a pared down Whole Foods.
Okay.
But the thing is everybody is just, I don't know. They go there to visit in the middle of the chip aisle.
Push them out of the way.
It's like, just go. Yesterday I said, you know what? I don't feel like cooking. We haven't had cold cuts for dinner in a long time. I want to go get some nice cold cuts, some fresh rolls, Almost $50 for fucking cold cuts.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's just crazy. But you know what's not crazy?
What's that?
Miss Viola.
Well, he's a little crazy.
Well, in the only the best ways.
Absolutely.
So, Miss Viola, welcome back to Super Gay Radio on Saturday morning. How are you?
Well, other than being ill, I'm good. Thank you.
Did you take my advice and get your wet sock therapy on last night?
You know what, Garrett? I didn't read that until this morning, but I am going to try that tonight, actually. I had heard that before, but I thought, you know what? That sounds interesting, so I'm going to give that a shot.
Now, here's Dr. Garrett's advice for you. If the wet sock portion of that freaks you out, because it will to 1% of the population that's out there, number one, that's dumb. Get over it, because your feet only feel wet for about a minute, and then you're like, oh, this is wonderful. But if you absolutely cannot do the wet sock part of that, do everything else identical except use Vicks Vapor Rub. Paul uses Vicks Vapor Rub on his feet. But, you know, still put the socks over it and do that, and it will magically speed up your recovery. You're not going to get well overnight, but it will absolutely speed that up, so that way you're not as coughy and sicky all over the place.
Well, at this point, I'll try anything at this point.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do it, and you'll feel better. So I'm going to turn you over to Paul, and I'm going to go get another cup of coffee. Welcome to the show, though.
Thank you.
Yay! Go get your coffee. I got to say, I'm part of that 1%, and it's got nothing to do with wet socks being on my feet. I can't sleep with anything on my feet, including covers. So
I felt like a menopausal woman the last 3 nights. I'm hot, I'm cold, I have a blanket on, a blanket off, the window open, the fan on, then I have to get up and turn the heat up. It's just been ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Now, come on, sweetie. That has absolutely nothing to do with your cold and everything to do with the fact that you're just getting older.
That's probably exactly. I probably am menopausal. In drag queen years, I think I'm going through menopause, so you're probably right.
No, you are. You are an absolute youthful little twink hidden under there somewhere.
Thank
absolutely.
You. I haven't been a twink since I was 8 years old, but thank you.
Yes, I know. Okay, RuPaul this week. What'd you think?
I hate to say that I was right, Paul.
I know you were.
I really do hate to say it, but she just got angrier and angrier before she went home, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Yeah.
And that just really surprised me.
Again, it's what was edited that we were allowed to see. Her getting angrier and angrier. But I find I'm getting more information out of the Untucked on YouTube after the episodes than I am during the episode, because the YouTube, I don't feel, is as edited as far as line for line. They sit and talk. But I understand. I mean, under all that pressure, you know. But honestly, I think your real self comes out under the pressure.
Yeah.
Other people are trying to say that, you know, she got nastier because of the pressure. It's like, yeah, because she's kind of in her head and nasty.
Mm-hmm. She's a perfectionist.
Yes.
Perfectionist, and and she strives for that. People think that when you – and I've heard people say that she was a little messy, and I've heard people say that she wasn't as put together. But you have to understand, when that's the look that you're going for and you're trying to achieve, it's perfect.
Yep.
And I've worked with a lot of girls that – I mean, there are two in Elmira, Liquor Galore and Voodoo Vagina. They started it all here in this town, and they're known all over. Those names are known all over. They started it because they, to a regular person off the street, would look messy. That's their shtick. That's,
right.
They it takes a long time to look that messy for them because that's what they are. And that's what I think the thing with Thorgy was, is that that's who she is. She is supposed to be a little bit of a clown. And I think people saw that, and then I think they assumed she didn't care, and then they heard her being frustrated with Bob, and I think they just kind of jumped to conclusions, and I don't think the producers helped that any.
No, not at all. You know, I will say again, I really appreciate the fact that Bob owns being a clown queen.
Yeah, and owns being obnoxious and understands that he can go a little too far sometimes.
Yep.
I appreciate because I can't. I'm the same way. And sometimes, you know, and I've learned over the years, I don't really do it anymore, but when I first started, you know, sometimes you can push the joke a little too far.
Yep. They keep telling me that, but I don't listen. That's part of my charm. I mean, look at Bianca Del Rio. She owned being a clown queen from the first episode of her season and still owns it. Because that's what she is. That's what she strives to be, a comedian who throws on a bunch of makeup and a dress and gets out there and struts it on heels. You know, and Thorgy really took offense. I think it was Chi-Chi that said something about clown drag or clown. And Thorgy got really upset. And it's like, well, this isn't clown. You know, I do some clown, but this is – and it's like, no, but that's – find your brand.
Yeah, it's not an insult, and I had never had any issue, and I call myself a clown. Look, I don't want to look like a real girl. I admire people that can. I think Derek Barry is gorgeous, and he's actually growing on me a little bit. I think he's beautiful. That's great. That is fantastic, and there is certainly a place for that. That is not me. I can paint myself to look like a real woman, but that's not entertaining to me. That's not who I am. To me, I want to be a clown, and I always have said, you know, if you look at Miss Viola and that's somebody you want to jump into bed with, then you either want to fuck your grandmother or a clown. Okay. And you've got deeper issues than that. That's how I feel. And I fully, fully embrace that. And I think Thorgy is just, I think that's an internal battle. I think she's one of those girls that's stuck between camp and being taken seriously. And I don't think she realizes that you can be camp and still be taken seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, for Christ's sake, look at Jackie Beat, look at Lady Bunny. I mean, people don't seem to realize that there'd be no RuPaul if there wasn't Lady Bunny.
I was just going to say that. All of the current living legends of drag that we have now are all some form of clown queen.
Exactly. Look at Divine. I mean, Divine paved the way. That's not camp. I don't know what is.
That's it. Do you know the name Sylvia Sidney for drag?
I do, actually, yes.
Okay. He was the grossest, most vile, made Divine look like a fucking non-kindergarten teacher. But owned it and owned the city of Boston and Provincetown for decades.
Well, look at Lee Bowery. Lee Bowery gave birth on stage to a human being in her number at Woodstock. I mean, for God's sake, and you know how many girls, Acid Betty, Kim Chi, you know, I can go on and on, take their looks and inspirations from Lee Bowery. It's all camp. And we're men in dresses, for Christ's sake. Let's not take ourselves so seriously, you know?
Exactly. Have fun with it. You know, and again, that's, I'm not always saying that, but it's like, have fun with it, because then your audience is going to have fun.
I think Thorgy's so immensely talented and gifted and funny, and I just feel like she's just selling herself short. And I think if she embraces every part of who she is as a performer, I mean, she's obviously going to go far now at this point. And honestly, I think she probably would have without the show. I mean, already a name, not a household name, but if you knew drag and you were familiar with it and you were on social media, you knew who she was. So, I don't know. I hope the best for her. But I really think that for her own peace of mind, it probably was the best time for her to go.
I do, too. And I think that, again, just like all of them, it depends on what they do with it once the season's over, you know.
Exactly.
And if you want to get out there and hawk yourself, great. If not, somebody's going to, you know.
I bring up Tempest Du Jour and Victoria Porkchop Parker all the time, because mm-hmm. those are two girls that went home first. And yep. those are two names that you always hear when you talk about RuPaul's Drag Race. It's not because they went home first. It's because of the careers that they made for themselves afterwards. Victoria
right.
Parker didn't go back home to the South and just feel sorry for herself and hide in a trailer somewhere. She moved to Los Angeles. She got into the Showgirls show out there. Like, she busts her butt, and
yep.
she's made a career for herself. And you know what? He's not young. He's in his late 40s now. That's fantastic.
Right.
Look at Tempest. I mean, she didn't lose all that weight and get super healthy and work her butt off to get on RuPaul's Drag Race just to walk away from it when it was over.
Right.
I mean, she's out there and she's strutting her stuff and she's kicking butt. I mean, it's what you make of it, like you said. It's all what you do with it after the fact.
Absolutely. Okay, so now who's your top three change to?
Mine is – I don't know that mine changed. I think Thorgy was in my fifth, but I am – growing strongly attached to Naomi Smalls, but I still think Bob's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think Naomi Smalls is second, and I want to say Kim Chi is going to be third, but I'm starting to see a little bit of weakness there, and I'm not sure she's going to be able to hang for much longer.
I'm seeing a little weakness in Kim Chi. I really think it's going to come down to, I still think it's going to come down to Bob and Kim Chi. I think Bob is going to walk away with it. Quite honestly, I think that if Bob doesn't win it, it's going to be a mistake.
Something pretty drastic would have to happen in the next couple of episodes for anyone other than Bob to win. I mean, if Derek Barry were to win at this point, something would look very suspicious, I think, because Derek just hasn't consistently produced anything very good. The only person I think at this point that could beat Bob and I would be okay with it, honestly, would be Naomi Smalls. I mean, but she would have to have a couple of really good weeks to really
right.
show that.
Yep. She's going to buck it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, take a little bit more charge and really, you know, show that she's got some balls under that dress.
Yep.
To win me over more. But I mean, I think Kim Chi is just very young in drag.
Yeah.
But when you look at only doing drag for the past couple of years and what she can do with it already, and I mean, it's just mind blowing, absolutely mind blowing. Both Bob and Kim Chi were my favorite looks this week.
Yeah.
For the
oh,
runway.
Oh my God, Kim Chi's was just unbelievable. I mean, she really took black and white.
Yep.
As far
killer.
As she could.
Killer.
And I appreciate that. And I didn't think that anybody could do it as well as Detox did at the finale that year, but boy, did they.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're all growing from it, you know, because everybody
oh,
gets
yeah.
the last season to look at and say, okay, this one did this one did that, da da da, and I can make that me.
And Bob's look was smart. I mean, it was a sad clown. It was very Pagliacci. It was very, you know, like, it wasn't just, this is what I'm going to do. I feel like with Bob, there's thought behind everything he does. Bob is very smart, and I think people forget that.
Right. Although I was disappointed that Bob didn't make an ashy joke.
I was hoping, but I really
because
was hoping.
It was just perfect with him and Naomi sitting there in gray makeup. It's like, oh my God, somebody make an ashy
perfect.
Joke. Oh, well, sweetie, I'm going to send you to go find some cold socks to put on.
Yes.
You get yourself better for next week because the race is getting tight. It's tightening up very, very quickly.
It's like a twink on his prom night. It's getting very tight.
Oh, yeah, the only time it's ever going to be tight again.
That's it.
So you have a wonderful week, sweetie, and feel better. And thanks again so much.
Of course. I'll talk to you soon. Mwah.
Bye, sweetie.
Get that wet sock therapy going.
Thank you, Garrett.
Okay, take care. So that was fun.
Wet sock, cold sock.
You know, it just needs to be wet. So if anybody out there is listening and you're under the weather and you're like, what is wet sock therapy and what is this insane person talking about, send me a note and I will send you the 411 on it. It is absolutely legitimate. You can Google it if you want and just bypass me and I won't cry too many tears. But my naturopathic doctor gave this to me about 7 years ago, and she sent it out to all of her patients and says, you know, if you're coming down with a cold or you feel a little under the weather, do wet sock therapy. And the key is to do it for 3 days in a row, and it helps your body's natural immune system kind of kick the yuck and the crud out. And it really does work. And I historically am never sick, and I attribute it to wet sock therapy is helping keep me healthy when I start feeling like I'm getting run down. So there's your unpaid medical endorsement of the week. So, Paul, are we ready to bring on the pride of St. Louis?
The emperor himself.
The emperor himself. I think it is. So, you know, for everybody who is listening to Super Gay Radio for the first time, number one, thank you for tuning in today. But our next guest is he's a friend to the brand here. He's been on Rated LGBT Radio. He's co-hosted with me on Rated G Radio. And now he is a guest for the first time on our Saturday morning show, Super Gay Radio. It is none other than best-selling author Chris Ando with his book, Delusions of Grandeur, still heating up the Amazon charts. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm in the market for a selfie stick as well. I heard that part of the conversation after I did Facebook Live for the first time. A big ruin on the east side, this giant old meatpacking plant, about 7-8 stories tall with two gigantic smokestacks. I used to climb through it and explore it, and I got word that they were demolishing it. So that was my first Facebook Live, is covering that. It was supposed to be demolished at 9 a.m. last Saturday, and it was delayed by about an hour and 10 minutes. So I had to fill that time on the fly. That was an interesting exercise.
You did a good job doing it. I got to see most of it, and I went back and watched it afterwards. And you're interesting. You keep things interesting. I love your stories.
Well, I really appreciate it. Paul's always been my biggest promoter.
Oh, because I got my name in his book.
Yes. I'm going to start right off with a story. How about that? This is a story that does not involve – it's very short. It does not involve St. Louis. It was when I moved back to California a few years ago, and before my place was ready, I rented a room from an older lady that I met. I actually met her in St. Louis. Her husband had owned the strip clubs in North Beach in San Francisco, and she was the second wife. He was quite a bit older. And he died, and she basically decided to indulge bad real estate investments. You know, her hobby for bad real estate investments came to St. Louis, where she grew up, and that's where I met her. She bought a big old mansion in the worst part of town and proceeded to rehab it. And so then she came to me to see about managing some other property that she bought, and that's how I befriended her. And then when I went out to California, she offered to let me rent a room. I knew she rented a room in her place in San Mateo. And so this story is about her. It's called Lemons. The party was set to begin, and Pat was a nervous wreck for several reasons. She was on thin ice with her adult children, who didn't want any negative feedback about their misbehaving kids, for starters. And the family didn't know she was still smoking. This would be a bombshell revelation, considering she nearly died from lung cancer. The patio party was lovely. Somehow Pat managed to hide her numerous ashtrays, and she held it together when her 5-year-old granddaughter wanted to pick every lemon from her tree, only to forget them in plastic bags. Enjoying her first cigarette of the night, Pat reflected on the event. She said, "I want lemons." And I said, "How many?" And she said, "I want all the lemons," Pat recalled. Then after a quick puff, continued, "Little bitch." I've never been a smoker, but I could empathize with how frayed someone's nerves would be, you know, I'm, dealing with.
Oh, absolutely. I switched over to vape, and I'm never without at least two or three of them on me, just in case one goes out. But I smoked for over 30 years, and I can't imagine trying to hide the fact that I smoked. Because there was never a moment that there wasn't a cigarette in my hand. and God, I miss it.
You still do?
I really do. I really do. I like the vape is great because it gives me the smoking feeling, much healthier without the carcinogens and things like that. And nicotine has helped keep most of the weight off. But yeah, no, there's nothing like now. I enjoy the smell of a burning cigarette, but I can't stand the smell of stale smoke on people's clothes or breath.
All right.
But a burning cigarette, like an incense, I could sit next to all day. But you had a story, Chris, that you put up on your blog, which is what's your blog title again?
Well, people go to Chris Sandoz Stories to find all of my on Facebook to find everything, but my direct link to my blog is the Wandering Emperor at Blogspot. Find me at Chris Sandoz Stories on Facebook, which has everything from all different sources, or go straight to my blog. But yeah, people come to me with their weirdest shit and their best shit, and so I got a tip off that some internet troll was targeting a business that hadn't even opened yet. It's a supper club that features drag shows, and this guy was basically blackmailed them if they don't hire this queen that's locally known as the Queen of Controversy, Janessa Hyland. If they don't fire her as show director, he's going to slam them everywhere, you know, Facebook, Yelp, wherever, and continue to do so. And so someone asked me to look into who he was, and so I started. It was a tiny tip of an enormous iceberg. This guy had a long criminal record. And then I learned about his obsession, which was most bizarre, with this Janessa Hyland, and my post about that got several thousand hits. You know, people just, and then it was, people were so taken by it that the day it was released, there's a bar here called Bar PM, which is kind of the Switzerland of gay bars in St. Louis. Each bar has its own drama, and Bar PM is kind of like this one drama-free oasis in the city. But they read the piece out loud and had the screenshots on the televisions while drag queens did their thing. So it turned into performance art immediately, which was a lot of fun. But the story was called Obsessed, Troubled Man's Quest to Ruin Queen of Controversy, Janessa Hyland. And it turns out this guy had become obsessed with her and traveled a few hundred miles to see one of her shows and then hit on her after the show, and she wasn't interested. And so to plot revenge, this guy who identifies as straight decided he was going to become a drag queen himself and a better drag queen than her as revenge. And so she's Janessa Hyland, and he announced that he was going on stage as Vanessa Hyland.
Okay.
And I tell you what, I say this all the time. I've lived from New York to San Francisco. I've never seen the kind of crazy stuff that I see here in St. Louis. And so it's just, and then the more I see and the more I write, the more new people come to me with leads all the time. A lot of leads I don't even pursue, but the ones I do pursue are like this. They're just treasure troves of good times.
Why are you such a magnet for the crazy? I still am fascinated by this
case
because you have such a fair, objective way about talking about the crazy too, which I think is very unique, because a lot of people could get jaded about how they present it, and you just kind of humorously present the facts.
I've always been drawn to interesting people, for starters. So, you know, I've never, you know, I was coming out, you know, there's gay life, especially I think 15, 20 years ago, could be really cliquey, and it was all about getting into a clique and conforming. And that was never my desire. I always thought it was too constraining. I always liked to talk to the outcast, talk to the person that – no one else is talking to find what the real stories are. So I've always had an openness towards people that are different. I myself felt different, of course, growing up gay in Oklahoma when I did. But it snowballs now. So people, the more I write, the more people know that I'm the person to come to. And there's such a, I mean, this sense is in a lot of places, but I see it especially strong here. There's such an aversion to upsetting the apple cart, and people will freeze you out if you're not falling in line. And so there's a lot of stories that no one else will touch, you know, because the blowback is just so tremendous. And there are people who have been major detractors of mine and disparage me, and then something will happen and they need a story out and I'm the only one there, and they come to me and say, you know, I know that I've been trashing you in the past, but this is happening, and someone's targeting my business, or someone's doing this that's unfair, someone's scamming somebody, and I take it, you know, I take it on for them, I mean, or for the sake of the story.
And that I don't get, but I'm not that kind of person. But because I know, I mean, I've read Delusions of Grandeur, A Few Hundred Tales from the Emperor of St. Louis, Chris Ando, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever you can find a book. And I love the book. But you've talked to people, and you sat down and reported stories for people that have really come out against you.
Yeah.
Previously, and tried to get you fired from jobs, and tried to get people to boycott businesses that you worked for or wrote for. I don't understand. It's not that I wouldn't talk to them. I would talk to them, and I would rip their asshole from one end to the other when I wrote the story. And you always stay fair, which is fun, but I don't know, not as satisfying for me.
You know, I'm driven by the desire to get the story, mm-hmm. and so I don't want to do anything. And there's a certain honor, I think, when someone does come to me. You know, that says it all. What I value is, of all the ways that I'm trashed, especially in St. Louis, no one says I'm dishonest.
Right.
And that's kind of an incredible thing among itself. So there's several ways I'm honored, and I'm also honored. My detractors are the first to read everything I write, you know, religiously.
Hmm.
So when a story comes out, there's a core group, mostly affiliated with a local blog here that is kind of my my personal haters. And they will read thoroughly everything I post, and then as it's disseminated on Facebook, as people share my stories, there's an orchestrated effort to comment on it and say, why is anyone reading this? This is, you know, don't support this. You know?
They're your best promoters.
This blog is also my fact checkers, because they're desperately trying to catch me in a lie or an untruth,
mm-hmm.
or falsification. And so an instance is this bar, the Monocle. They had an investor who never actually invested anything. There were several investors involved, and the person who drew up the agreements, it turns out, had never put a penny of his own money in, which was causing major financial struggles. And I wrote that piece on my blog, and this rival blog interviewed that person who conned the other investors, you know, and vague booked about how they were going to expose how flawed my story was, and then of course they never ran theirs because my story was accurate. So I have built-in fact checkers, but my role, I take my role seriously, which is to find the most interesting stories and to tell them truthfully, and that's where I get my, and the fact that people come to me in the end is kind of the satisfaction enough. So I think that's kind of where I come from, but occasionally I read people, you know. You know, I have my moments, definitely.
Well, I've never seen it. I'll say that I've never read anything that I thought was untrue or just an all-out slam from you. And I really want people to know that are listening. You have to. I have never been to St. Louis. I've flown over it a couple of times, but. You don't have to be from the area to enjoy the stories because they really are human stories, fault and folly, wonderful perversion, camper trailer sex with straight men. I mean, you name it, it's in there. It's just, it's absolutely fascinating. I still think that you should, you know, take this on the road and just do your readings for people because, entertaining.
That is my next incarnation is, my book signings were already more like shows and signings. You think of a book signing, you kind of think of someone standing at a podium, a fairly dry, reserved event. And my events were always drunk. You know, people, they were in bars, people were drinking. I would tell hour-long sets of stories. And it occurred to me this is much more of a show than it is a signing. And after going to see John Waters perform, I realized he's doing exactly what I basically do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is get up and tell stories. So that is where I'm moving into, and I'm looking forward to launching regionally a few of those events. And I'm also, in the coming 12 months, I'm going to go back out on tour as well and plan to hit New York and San Francisco and a couple of places, you know, just keep moving.
Oh, good. I mean, it's going to be hugely. I mean, I can't imagine. I saw John Waters back in Boston years and years and years ago, and it was probably one of the most entertaining quote unquote stand-ups that I've ever seen, because there's nothing more interesting than a story instead of a 3 or 4 line joke. You know,
sure.
you get drawn into the story. There's and you get to know the characters, and you've got such a vibrant way of describing people and bringing their personality out, even within short chapters. I mean, that's the other great thing about your book is the chapters are short and easy to read through. And I mean, I buzzed through it in 2 days, the first read. It's like, because you just can't stop. It's one of those.
Chris has an addictive writing style.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is odd for a writer to do what you do, Chris. But it is weirdly addicting. So I don't know what Kool-Aid you put in it, but it works.
Well, it's about appealing to the ADD nature of life right now. That my dad was born in the house The Outsiders was filmed in North Tulsa. And our family inherited my great-grandma's house 2 blocks away, and there was a railroad track and a great big tree in the backyard, and the whole family would sit around and tell stories, and you had to get their attention, because everyone, it was a family of great storytellers. So, you know, you had to be succinct, you had to have a hook that hooked them in, you had to get to the punchline fast. And that's the way I do it. You know, it's like, you know, the title kind of hooks someone in, and I don't waste a lot of time before I get right to the point.
No, you don't. It's there. It's one punch, but they all have an arc. They all have a really good writing arc. I'm just glancing through. There's a couple that are 3 or 4 pages long, but that's about the longest.
About the longest. Or about three.
Now, Chris, have you given any thought to coaching aspiring writers to write in a manner that would be actually interesting to read?
Yeah, I would really like that. I haven't given it a lot of thought right now because I've been trying to get so many projects off the ground. But I would actually, I'm always scouting new talent, whatever the talent is, especially locally. Trying to highlight people like great artists. There's a guy that I found, Colby Jack Adams, which is a brilliant artist. And I did a big feature on him, and then a newspaper picked him up, and now he's has an art show scheduled based on that. So I'm always trying to find ways to discover people and highlight highlight talent, especially here in St. Louis, trying to kind of develop people as much as I can.
Cool.
He also lets people know where to get cheap chicken and
deer steak. I was at Bar PM the other day, which is on South Broadway, which is a real blue-collar, gritty, you know, urban strip. and these two rough old gals were walking down the street offering deer meat out of their backpack.
I love backpack deer meat.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty special. And so we actually invited them into the bar, and I bought them a shot and kind of gave them a few bucks to tell me all about. I told them, first off, I'm not buying any deer meat, but I would like to. I would like to hear. And then my friend grilled them about where they were getting their chicken. Their chicken had the local grocery chain label still on it.
I mean, it was warm that day.
Yeah, I don't know if the stuff was still frozen somehow. Really don't know how. I don't know what their business model is. It was frozen, but who knows? It could have been like all soggy and outside of a dumpster, and then they refroze it.
But the takeaway from that is, no matter how bad you think your life is, you don't have to sell chicken on the corner out of a backpack.
God, it can always be so much worse, couldn't it?
But,
you know, at the end of the day, we don't know where they're going home. I mean, they could be in one of those big St. Louis mansions, too, and, going around going, look at the score we did today.
Right.
Yeah, I know. That's such a... I don't know. I remember when I was on the streets in Boston in the 80s, and people used to believe that half of the panhandlers were actually living in these wonderful apartments at the Hancock Towers. And it's like, yeah, I really don't think so. I mean, that's an awful lot of work to get dressed up and look like you're homeless just to hope and pray that somebody's going to buy or beg from you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So Chris, what do you got coming up?
Well, then I'm working on scheduling some shows on the road. So that's the next big thing I've got going. And I'm getting married soon, probably July. We're still working on nailing down the venue.
Will you wear white?
I very well may, you know, I contrary to popular belief, I'm very sexually pure, and
okay.
All right. Yeah.
You know, so life has so many twists and turns. It's a really. I think I'm happier than I've ever been. Actually, life is really nice right now. I getting this book done about killed me. You know,
right.
And I really had to sacrifice a lot and a 14-year relationship collapsed and threw me from San Francisco to New York and kind of got beat up around New York and came to St. Louis and downshifted. And I just dedicated myself during that last year to finishing the book, which the book had been, you know, a 7-year project. And that last year, you know, I was broker than I'd been in my adult life and had the least sex I had in my adult life. And I just would work a day job, go home to this little apartment I had, and just sit and work on the book. And I was 100% dedicated to getting it done. And so, yeah, the planets aligned, and I just used that time. And now the fruits of that are paying off, and things are really just all kinds of opportunities are opening up now.
Good for
cool.
you. We love hearing that.
Now, are you still charting on Amazon?
You know, I don't think so. It's, blew up really big. It held on for a long time, but I haven't even checked recently. So I know that my royalties are not nearly what they were. So hopefully getting the show back on the road picks that up a bit. But, I still do get royalties, and they hit when I least expect it. I mean, every month I get something, but I don't plan for it.
Right.
And I'll check my bank account, and there'll be money in there, and I'll say, oh, wow, that sure is nice.
I think the audiobook is going to breathe new life into it.
Because people don't read anymore, yeah.
No, they don't read anymore. And the thing is when I've listened to quite a few audiobooks, I now will only purchase an audiobook if it's actually read by the author. I won't go to these... that, you know, because they got these voice actors now that's all they do is audiobooks for people. You lose something. You really lose something in it.
Well, okay, I'm going to jump in here and say that you really lose something unless you have an author like Chris who reads his book, and then you're really getting a big win. You know, I've been to events where authors read their books, and even, you know, you have to go, have you ever read your book aloud before? Because you are a horrible reader.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you lose something when an actor does it.
Yeah.
You know, just, I don't know, the author ones just seem to hit more. I'm just making a hint to you, Chris. I want you to record your own book.
Well,
it's so tempting to have someone else do it because basically they just get a percentage. You don't have to pay them anything up front when someone else reads it. And so I could just turn this over and within a couple months it would be done at like a turnkey operation. But yeah, it wouldn't be the same. And I would cringe at the way someone else read it because, you know, that's not how you tell the story. And these stories started off as oral stories that I translated to paper. And so the oral version is critical. You know, you have to get the punchline correct.
Yeah, and the little voices and just I don't know, reading aloud anything that isn't yours, you're not going to have the same inflection that the author would have because it's coming out of their head. That I look forward to because I think that's really going to, because again, nobody reads. It's so tough to read now. We're all on the go 100% of the time.
Yeah. I think people in the car, I've listened to audiobooks in the car on long trips and it's a great way to do it.
Oh, fantastic way to travel or at the beach because you can't read your tablet or your phone at the beach because the sun is so loud or so strong on the screen. And yeah, no. So that's your next project to actually get off the ground, mister.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's definitely the plan. So, Paul, what are your favorite parts of the book other than the part that you're in?
My favorite part, and I always get his name wrong, and I don't know why, but it's probably because there's so many names in my head. Josh is my favorite. All the stories surrounding him and surrounding the married one with the brunch, and I'm gay.
Yeah, oh yeah. And both of Paul's favorite characters. Well, I was going to say both were straight, but the second story he started straight and ended up not being. But Josh was this kid that I mentored. I rented an apartment to him here in St. Louis years ago, and he was from the country, didn't really know anybody, and took to me like a lost puppy, just like would start sending me texts like I was a friend of his when I was like this leasing agent, you know, that was 15, 20 years older or more, I guess. And he started coming around, and so I somewhat adopted him, and I have a whole series of stories about him because it turns out he was dating this really nasty girl with some horrible like venereal disease or something, and the story starts off with him when we're sitting hanging out, and he says, "Dude, Amanda's vagina smells awful," and he had these vaginal updates. I'd see the kid, you know, he'd come over for dinner or something, and always had to give me an update on his girlfriend's condition, but they would not go to the doctor. And so this whole series in the book is about my constant efforts to get them to a clinic to get this thing checked out, you know, and how he had this aversion to going and refused to.
Yeah, it's just as the whole fatherly thing that you did with it, and just it's the perfect white trash story, you know, with the mother, the drug addicted mother, and the grandmother's involved, and you have to read this book, people. Seriously, I have recommended this book to so many people, given away 6 copies of it. I have never had anybody come back and say, why did you have me read this? Everybody's come back and said, oh my God, find me another one. So we need a book 2.
Okay.
So, because it's like my friend, I want to say it was Sharon down in North Carolina, thanked me for introducing her to your book, and it was a Dirty Reader's Digest or something like that. It was a fun Reader's Digest type story thing. And she had gone through surgery and she couldn't put it down. So you're out there healing people with this book.
Yeah, several people have told me that it was exactly what they needed during recovery. You know, but the second story you had mentioned, my first friend in the world from childhood, her husband was all interested in coming to St. Louis all the time to visit, which we didn't think much of, but he was a really socially awkward guy. Well, mm-hmm. It turns out he was gay, and so he was utilizing me to secretly get inducted into the gay community here. And when he decided to leave his wife to be gay, he did it in the most diva way possible, which was online, announcing it to the world on Facebook before he even told his wife. And so once he came out, and that's all, it's all in the book, it turns out that this family friend named Uncle Bruce, which everyone around town knew was kind of a horny old goat, this real scrawny little guy, it turns out that he had been this guy's friends with benefits back in their small town of Ottawa, Kansas. And so I really enjoy his part of the book because, you know, he had been – Lenny is the name of the guy who came out of the closet. And so all of a sudden Lenny is fully inducted into the gay community and has all these choices, but his small-town, down-low lover is left in the dust and is obsessed with him and is hoping that he comes back. And eventually it gets to him because he's just so frustrated with it. And so Lenny, he knew that Lenny was in trouble for being on Facebook at work because Lenny was addicted to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so this is the part about, it came out in the town that the love nest for Lenny and Uncle Bruce was this camper. And everyone around their town of Ottawa, Kansas was talking about the camper because Lenny came out as gay and everyone knew the camper was where they did it. And that became the big story of the town, which Lenny was furious about. Okay, Bruce saw Lenny's Facebook addiction had gotten him into trouble at work to the point that he was on probation. But he's still on there all the time. I see that green notification light. He could really get into trouble. After a couple of months of the cold shoulder from Lenny, Uncle Bruce decided to call his boss at the auto dealership and tell her all about it. "Hi, I'm Lenny's ex-lover, Bruce, the one from the camper," he began.
Oh my God! I just have to roll my eyes at that.
Well, that's it. And I mean, we've got to end it there because our hour is coming up. But there is no better way to end this than with Camp a Trailer Love. I mean, it's just. Thank you so much, Chris. Everybody, go out, get his book, "Delusions of Grandeur: A Few Hundred Tales from the Emperor of St. Louis." Chris Ando. It is on Amazon now. Thanks a lot, Guy. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Till next time.
Thanks,
Chris, you rock. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
So, Paul, we got 2 minutes left. What are you doing with the rest of your weekend?
Rest of my weekend. I've got to answer some emails, and I've got yard work to do because I see the sun is out today. I thought it was going to rain today, but it's not.
Nice.
So, and then grocery shopping tomorrow while the Christians are all holed up in church, so I don't have to deal with them on the roads. And that's about it for. Oh shit! We got dinner tonight with the lesbians. So yeah.
Are you cooking? Or are you going?
No, going out to dinner.
Okay.
I might try and get out of it. Shh, they don't listen to this anyway. what are you up to?
Well, right after the show, I'm going to get a quick workout in. I'll get about an hour and a half of a workout in. And then my buddy Craig Campobasso, he's the director and writer of a new LGBT comedy called Please Don't Eat the Pansies that's going to be filming this summer. He's coming down to Huntington Beach. We're going to hang out for a few hours. And so that's it. That's what I'm going to be doing today. And then hopefully programming the rest of the shows for next week because tomorrow's busy. I'm going to see Terry Reyes play Electricity up in Hollywood. If you have not got your tickets yet and you're in Southern California, you've got to go. It's playing now through the end of May, every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. I'm going tomorrow night with two of my friends and can't wait to go see it. It's getting rave reviews. And if you need help on finding tickets, let me know, because I will get you hooked up, and you can go check out Terry's play and then spread the good word, because it's put a lot of time and hard work into it. And it's and again, we don't need to be gratuitous in giving praise, because we don't do that. It's a great performance. So can't wait to go see that.
Great.
So that's it. We've got about 20 seconds left. So, Paul, we're going to be back next Saturday. With
next
Super
Saturday
Gay Radio
with
Live at 8 o'clock.
Kenny Cave, Ken Kleiber from That's Entertainment. Will
oh
be
my
going
God, I can't. I love
know.
Him.
Yes.
Kenny Kleiber rocks.
My fuckable ginger boy.
There we go. With that, everybody, have a great weekend. Follow the show. Tell your friends to tune in. We love doing this with and for you, and we will see you live next Saturday. Thanks, Paul.
Bye.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.